That's a central insight of many feminist psychologists. In other words, saying yes all the time and pleasing others and so on. People who are in helping professions, social workers, or people in work for justice, or just people who want to help each other. There's always the issue of, you know, do I say yes all the time or no all the time? Is there a boundary? And this is around burnout, is a central question. I see people shake, nodding their heads, so you know what I'm talking about. It's an issue, politically speaking, so it's personal, but politically. Does a country need to have some borders, some control over its borders? Or do you just let everybody in? This is the political kerfuffle at the moment. Countries saying, unless we absolutely control who gets in, we will be swamped by others. And so better to keep everybody out so that nobody will get in. That's the kind of thinking. So how do we think about this? It's a big issue for communities. What is community life? What is my life? And as Dietrich Bonhoeffer said, you know, in his book, Life Together, if you don't know how to be alone, you don't know how to be in community. If you don't know how to be in community, you can't know how to be in true solitude. So it's that kind of thing. So the two books that I've found, three books, very helpful. The first one is by the Croatian theologian Miroslav Volf, Identity, Difference, and Otherness. How many have read that book? Two, three. Okay, so let me just try to... I'll try to sort of hone in on one or two points. He's now teaching in the States, I think at Yale. And he comes out of the Croatian conflict, the former Yugoslavia. So he comes out of a context in which for a long time, under communism, different racial religious groups were kept under one nation state. And the potential conflicts were sort of forcibly repressed. Once communism fell, we all know the former Yugoslavia descended into violent chaos. So he's writing as a theologian who says, what kinds of boundaries are good and essential to identity, and which ones are bad and exclude? So he does say that for an individual and for a person, having some sense of where I leave off and where another begins is essential to a healthy life. And without that boundary, bad things happen. And I think actually what the bad things that happen are better articulated by Christopher Lash in his old books now. One is called The Culture of Narcissism, and the other is The Minimal Self. And in those two books, he says that when a person has no adequate boundary between themselves and other people or the rest of the world, two things can happen. And the first is that I simply extend out to other people and to the world my questions, my ideas, my needs, my wants. And he calls that the culture of narcissism. Just to see the whole world in terms of my needs, my wants. And he says that culturally, as Americans, we tend to do that. We see the whole world through our needs and wants. Narcissism. But underneath that, it's a lack of boundary. It's a lack of seeing the limits of my boundary and the beginnings of other places in the world, other people in the world. And then in his last book, The Minimal Self, he said, and the other bad thing that can happen when there's no boundary is all the world can come crashing in on me. All the suffering of the world, everything, because I have no boundary. So this is what can happen so easy. For example, we just watch the news, especially for Americans. It's just like, it's all our responsibility. We did it. We're responsible. All this bad stuff is on me. So it's the reverse of the culture of narcissism. It's that I have no way of separating myself from the rest of the world. And I think this is something that happens to good people. You know, I genuinely take in, you know, everything that's going on in the world. And it's an especial difficulty for good people concerned with justice and peace, I think. And especially true for Americans. And I think it's, and Canadians, we're kind of in the back pocket here. It's so important for us to relieve each other of that burden. You know, just to give a concrete example, if I watch the news every night, I see what's going on in Africa. If that overwhelms me and I feel totally responsible for it, I'm just gonna fry. And that can happen because I don't have a sense of personal boundary, but it can also happen just because we live in a culture, the culture of America, which does think it's responsible for everything in the world, that there is no boundary to our manifest destiny. There is no boundary. But it's not true. If you go to Africa today, really the biggest player is China. The crisis in the Sudan would have been solved a long time ago if China had agreed. All over Africa, Chinese students are studying mostly mining and engineering because it wants the natural resources of that continent, which is quite serious given the issues of human rights and so on. So, not to have a boundary personally is very problematic. But not to have, for the reasons I've just said, but it's also true in terms of groups, cities, countries, not to have a boundary is a sure path to social and political chaos. Now, some of you, you know, you are in a church community or a local community or a family as well. Many groups have floundered because they had no boundary. In other words, anything goes. Anybody wants to come here, that's just fine. About anything. And that's seen as inclusive and open and whatever. And it usually results in chaos and crumbling and burnout. On the other hand, you find groups who set up a huge, rigid boundary. This is who we are, this is what we can do, and we are going to keep out these people, these groups who don't think this or that or the other thing. It excludes. And what Miroslav Volf is writing about is also the awareness that groups that have a sharp identity exclude. Churches exclude, countries, racial groups exclude. They keep out the other. So what? This is the dilemma. How do you have boundaries that help create identity, or boundaries that exclude others? This is the tension for any group. And I think the key thing that Volf says, and actually is in a footnote that he refers to another thinker, is that there's a huge difference between a boundary that is formed when a group has a positive sense of who and what it's for, or a boundary that's formed primarily because of who and what you're against. It's really different, and I'd invite you to talk about that. It's how that boundary is shaped is crucial. Now, I think it is very crucial at this time in our political history, where I think there is a crisis in America, in the empire, because the really dynamic, positive sense of who and what America's for is fading. The dream, you know, that pulled so many different people together, the dream of the republic, the little dream, the dream of the small republic has diminished. And as that's faded, we have needed enemies as the social glue to keep us together. So in other words, when you're not held together by a positive sense of purpose, without a vision, the people fail. You resort to negative things, enemies to keep you together. And there's a fabulous novel by Don DeLillo, Underworld. I think it's really the best novel of the, it's arguably the best novel of the 20th century as insight into America. What he says is that he thinks the huge shift begins to happen in the 1950s. By the 1950s, America's an empire. And what's the subtle shift is that America shifts from becoming a nation state governed by a dream of democracy to becoming a world empire shaped by being against a great enemy, communism. So to be an American, it's subtle and it's complex, but moves from being for democracy to being against communism. And that's soul-destroying. And when the great enemy falls, the need for new enemies emerges. So there was a while, a 10-year period of little enemies, you know, Noriega of Panama. And finally, after 9/11, terrorism, the great enemy. And the boundaries and the borders are serious, severe, and excluding. So I invite you to talk together about this, because I think it affects us as individuals. You know, our search for personal identity, healthy boundaries. You know, I think for anybody that works with other people, lives with other people, you can form a wall between yourself and others. You know, we're going to be in control of our lives and say no and no and no. But the other way of living, which I think is the way of the gospel, is to say, what is the deep yes of my life? Who and what do I really say yes to? And that's going to then shape who and what I say no to. But the spirit is totally different. I'm living out of something that I believe in, that I hope in. So, you know, just on a simple level, daily in my own life, I have to keep saying, I'm here because of people I'm saying yes to, of the gospel. I'm saying yes to Jesus. I'm saying yes to God. That's who and what I'm living for. And somehow it just makes it easier to say, no, I'm sorry, I can't do that. I have to say no. I can't go here, can't give that talk, can't get involved in this. Not because I think what you're doing is wrong, it's just I have other things I need to do. And every one of us has a particular yes. You know, it's not the same for me as for you. But you have to live out of that. And it gets much, it's like I said about hospital, it gets easier. Nope, sorry, bye, see you. You know, move on. It's quite different from this rigid, no, not now. Not ever. No way. Because you can do that and still have no idea what you're living for. And I think our biggest challenge as church people in a culture where that is defined more by who and what it's against is to be able to preach the good news of we have a reason to live for. We have a vision. The reign of God. You know, we're living for that. I know I'm tossing out a lot. I think I've got time just for one or two questions just to get going here. Yeah, I would say a very concrete example. We get maybe 200 or 300 applications every year for interns, serious applications. And so people come from a wide variety of backgrounds. No faith, some faith, Christians, Jews, Muslims, from all over the world. And so we could just say, okay, you're all welcome, which we couldn't do anyway. We have to make some choices. So all we do is say, this is who we are. We're a Christian community. That means some very simple things. We pray together in the morning. The gospel is the basis of that reflection time and that prayer time. Over and above that, we have lunch together when we can. We have supper when we can at certain times. This is who we are. If you want to join in that, you know, and there's room, you're welcome. If you don't want to do that, there are lots of other groups who do things differently. So you're kind of saying, this is who we are. If that fits with you, and there's a further discernment, great. But if not, other things. I think the biggest mistake some groups make is just say, you know, whatever. We'll just make room for everybody, because you can't actually do that. And every group needs to be able to say, we can't do everything, but we're going to do something. This is what we do. Or every church community, you can't do everything, but we're going to do this. And as Oscar Romero says, we can't do everything, but we can do something. And that something is really important. So I think that as every group, if you can live authentically out of the something that we're meant to do with my life or our lives, it will encourage other people not to do the same, but to do what they do. To do what they... Just take one more question. We have to go. I guess it's a big question and a small question, but you're asking, if somebody speaks for the community, how do you know that they're speaking for the community? I see, sure. It seems to me the simpler the better. It's probably good to have something written down. These are the basic things that we believe. I wouldn't make it too detailed, but this is where we stand. This is our basic position. And that allows you to, you can speak out of that and then adapt it to particular situations. If I was in a group, I'd sort of want to hang out around a lot to have a, be sure that I'm not over-speaking for the group. That's an important question. Okay.
I'm so sorry. I know we'd all love to sit, and sorry. It's been such an honor,
so would I.
Mary Jo, to have you here with us. She has to get to the airport. She has a wedding on her.